This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I'm so thrilled to have this conversation as we move into a very different kind of understanding of our spiritual gifts as people and what spiritual gifting actually means, right? So we were thinking about having a conversation about raising children who have very pronounced and specific talents, skills, needs, and abilities, right? And we played around with whether we talk about talents, like, you know, an artistic talent or a sporting talent, or if we talk about an academic talent, or if we talk about the challenges, concerns, and maybe joys that parenting somebody who has a spiritual gifting can present. And we settled on spiritual gifting for a variety of reasons. I think it's not often spoken about, especially in children, right? If you are going through a spiritual process and you find your gobela and you go have to do this and that and you're an adult, that's a very specific conversation. And you talk about the challenges and they're kind of more heard of, right? But if your child has a spiritual gift, what does that require of you as the parent? So can we talk about that, raising a spiritually gifted child? Because we know it can be incredibly complicated. Perhaps it's at odds or brings into question your own spiritual beliefs. So what do you do then? Can't block your child's blessings, or can you? And then also, what constitutes a spiritual gift in the context of this conversation? So let's speak to Mkulu Raba, who is a African spiritualist in Gobela, to guide us through the conversation about parenting and what it means, what it looks like, what to look out for, how to support yourself, how to ask for help, and how to lean into those who are guiding your child's spiritual process in raising a child who is spiritually gifted.
Urgent, topical, timely. Power 98.7, getting you talking about what matters.
Nkulu Raba Thokoza, welcome to Power Lunch.
Chobozani Kamago, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to actually get into this topic because it's something that I know my mother had to intimately deal with from a very young age. Right. And also having spiritual children, their parents react to it differently. So it's very fascinating to see what those responses look like and what actually is required of the parents in this instance for spiritually gifted children.
Absolutely. So perhaps we start right there. How old were you when you started realizing that perhaps you're different and there's a gifting upon your life? And maybe you can give us some of the insights into how your parents reacted to it. How were you raised?
So I was raised in Cape Town in Kokoletu in a very matriarchal home. So I used to live with my mother, her sisters, and my grandmother. You know, the quintessential black family with all the cousins and the aunts. You know what it looks like.
Of course, of course.
But I was 3 years old when they realized, something's a little bit different. Because there was one instance, we baptized all of us Roman Catholic and we went to church. But there was an instance where I woke up on Christmas Day, there's even a picture of it, and my left side of my face was swollen and one of my eyes was swollen shut. Okay. And I woke up and I said, I had a dream.
Uh-huh.
I saw this person, this is what their name is, this is what I saw, and my cousins at the time made fun of me, and they were like, you just got exposed to witchcraft, and that's it, it has nothing to do with anything, and I sort of like carried that, but my mother didn't know what to do, and she went to my grandmother and said, this child is saying this, what do we do?
Mm.
And it's not like we were a family that largely engages in African cultural things or traditions. My grandmother knows about them, but we didn't engage in them unless it's a young boy going to initiation school.
Right.
So for this moment, my grandmother was like, we need to finally Sicily, which means we need to make African beer. We must make umbot. Mm-hmm. And we must say, one, we thank you for your visit. We see that the child has seen you, but please do not harm the child in this way. Mm. You can expose them to certain things, but if there are certain things that they may not be ready for. So then it became sort of a tradition. It wasn't a family tradition, but it became a tradition because I was considered now a sick child. I'd wake up and be like, you need to do this. You need to take cough salt and do this at age 3.
My gosh.
It was at age 7 where I was exposed to someone who wasn't even of my family, but a family friend, because I was like, I guess I grew up in a liberal household,
sure.
But a family friend who I considered an uncle was a traditional healer. And his homestead was here, Johannesburg. But when he came to Cape Town to see his clients there, he would come to our home,
right.
Our house. And what was fascinating is that he would use, like, my bedroom would then become the consultation room.
Amazing.
And so even that was sort of the signs that were pointing to the fact that this person needs to go down this path. And I think I was grateful in that even my guides in showing me where I needed to get help, besides having a gobela, a child or a spiritual child would go through a series of sicknesses that do need to be healed, but then don't necessarily mean that they need to twasa at that particular moment. So I had a lot of spiritual guides really who helped me like sort of navigate growing up with irozi, but not necessarily I needed to twasa in that moment until such time that I was actually ready. So there are a lot of people that carry you through that process besides just your parents. Mm-hmm. And if parents don't have that light, I always suggest that they find a trusted healer, a family healer that will be able to sort of like walk the child even through their dreams and able to explain what's happening. And I'm grateful that that happened for me at the time until I was ready to definitely take up the calling.
What an incredible story, Mkhulu. And it sounds so wonderful that you had parents who were at least open to having the conversation and that, you know, they listened to you. Because at 3 years old, I mean, you know, a person can say, you just have an overactive imagination, or you watched a strange movie and now that's why you're dreaming this or that. Mm-hmm. But to take that into consideration, to take it seriously and to have the conversation, would you say that that's one of the foundational steps to guiding and raising a spiritual child?
Definitely. I think it's being able to sort of trust what the child is saying, especially if you are picking up on a pattern. They say something, it happens. They point out something, it happens. In any general sense, I feel like children are not listened to or heard. And that's why most of the time harm can come towards them. But also that at such a fragile and vulnerable state, children, they are the most spiritually gifted they can be at that age, is because they are exposed and see everything. Mm. And so sometimes it's important as a parent to be able to, I don't know, distinguish between and also create a logbook. Say it like a journal of the things, or start a practice just in general. It doesn't even have to be gifted children, just when your child wakes up. What did you dream? How was it? Mm. How did you feel? It creates a culture of knowing how to interact with our spiritual selves, even if we are not spiritually gifted. So even to just create that practice of what does your dream state look like, it lets you know, or lets you in even into your spiritual child's subconscious. What are they being exposed to daily? Yeah. So that you can differentiate whether it's something that was influenced or it is something that's truly coming from a spiritual place. And I think really monitoring and really jotting down those things when they happen really assist parents, even when they do seek out help. They have symptoms, they have dreams, they have faces, if they are faces, so they can go to a healer with knowing exactly what's going on and what questions to ask.
I mean, you're talking about as young as 3 years old. Even seven is extremely young. But mm-hmm. I mean, how did you have the articulation of what you had seen or what you had felt? How are you going to even know now?
Definitely. I think what was easier is that just seeing a symbol, I remember largely like a dream that I had when I was like about 8 years old. And I went to my mother and I was like, I was in this hut on this hill. I, by the way, grew up in a township in Ekailicha, Cape Town.
No huts.
There are no huts. There are no hills. So I'm like, I saw this and I saw this person. They said their name is this. And we sat around and we had like a little bit of a chat. And I was like, yo, but this felt like it was in Lesotho. And my mother's like, oh, that's crazy. We in South Africa, crazy about you. And but post, like, even when I went into my second phase of Ukthwasa, when I Thwasa Thokoza, my mother, I had been asking her for years, I think you have siblings. And I think they're in Lesotho. And my mother's like, oh, no. And it was on a paternal side, who is a Lesotho man, who came from Lesotho, came to sit. And my mother's like, no, I know that all my siblings had died, and that's all I know. And I reminded her of the dream. And literally, when she went home, it was exactly as I had described it when I was eight. Wow. So there are things that happen where you do dream of things, but it takes years for it to materialize. So even then, I think it becomes harder then to prove if a person is spiritually gifted or not, because not everything they see will manifest immediately.
Right, right. Which then leads to my next question. What is the process to take in addressing the gift? Particularly, you know, we find that many times an unanswered gift or calling brings confusion or ill health or, you know, a variety of dangers to the child. So what are the steps to take, Mkhulu?
So I think if there's already sort of an acknowledgement of the fact that there is something outside of what we consider normal human capacity happening to the child. One, the child is consistently sickly. Even if they're not exposed to a lot of things, they are physically ill, or they complain about things that are outside the jurisdiction really of a normal GP. So when they go to the doctor says, no, the child is okay. So from that point of view, then we already know that we need to approach a solution outside of what we know.
Okay.
So some people can approach prophets. So through the church, there are churches of prophecy that work with people who work with children specifically, and children who are ailed with these things. So sometimes they'll prescribe a regimen that is non harmful or doesn't expose a child to too much at a young age. So they won't use traditional medicine. They won't use muti. They'll maybe use Vaseline, use water, pray over the child, sort of protect the child in that manner. And I think for parents, it's also very important when you do recognize it to sort of approach, like a trusted, even a family elder.
Okay.
The grandparents. So our grandparents, as much as they say they don't know these things, they always know these things. They always know these things. Sometimes it's a simple solution of always sometimes, let's say once a year, if you live in an urban area and you do have a rural homestead, to take the child there.
Right.
Once a year, just so that they are able to be grounded, because I think we also need to speak about why they get sick. It is because there's not enough grounding that is happening. And so the solutions then that are given to the children have to be something that grounds them, going back to their homestead, being exposed to a prayer, even the mother praying over the child, upahla, telling the ancestors, yes, we recognize this dream. Okay, the child saw this. We don't understand as a family. What does it mean? There are family members that will even dream on behalf of what needs to happen for the child.
Yes, yes.
So it is very much a family and communal effort, really.
Mm, mm. just as there is a doctor for adults and there's a pediatrician for children, is there a child-focused gobela if that needs to happen?
I don't know if they... I can say, okay, there are people who are gifted in knowing how to heal children and predominantly work with children, yes. But when it comes to idlozi that needs to grow, the gobela is almost insignificant because the child is the one, or the people that are ailing the child are the one that point out to the child where they should go. And sometimes if they don't point it out and it's too late, that is why I always say that having a trusted family healer, that becomes the person who becomes the gobela instead. Because there's also the assumption that you always dream of your gobela, you always dream of where you need to go. Some people walk there. Some people go into trance and they find themselves there. Sometimes you bump into your gobela and it feels like I've known you for a very long time. That is your spirit saying, I recognize this person and within this capacity. So that's why it becomes important to ask the child, how do you feel around this person? Even when you go to that traditional healer, go with your child, ask the child afterwards, how did you feel? It feels like such an insignificant thing, but as much as their words can't articulate, the spirit does.
Yeah. I think that's so profound. And if you'll allow me to extend that to, in general, how your children feel around a variety of people or in different places, it says a lot about what the spirit is there, what the intentions are there. So that's a very, very important thing to think about. I wonder if you could take us through what some of the challenges, what some of the highlights, some of the maybe more interesting or fascinating things that happen to you growing up with a gift were?
I think it was always the very inexplicable medical illnesses that nobody could sort of diagnose. I remember even in high school, I had something called pseudoparalysis. It's a thing that happens where your mind or your brain tells a part of your body that we're paralyzed, we cannot work. And it's not medically like that, but the brain has convinced itself that it is like that. So at first they diagnosed it as like my hands, just around, I think, grade 11. I don't know what was happening. I was seeing a lot of things. And Amazis were like, oh, so you're not going to heed our call? That's okay. So here's what we're going to do. Around exam season, my hands just froze. Oh, and because it was winter, they thought at first it's chilblains, maybe almost frostbite, but they're like, but there's movement, but the hands won't move. And I think it was such a frustrating time for me because it made me so vulnerable even then, because it was one of my first lessons of idlozi, teaching me to rely on others. To not act like an island, especially when you're a teenager and you're just like, I'm going through my own things, there's hormones, and you're also seeing, you're getting sicker, and even spiritually, you are being exposed or seeing a lot more, but you don't know how to help yourself. And that was like a very particularly frustrating moment. But then I was grateful even then, because when I got pseudoparalysis, I went to the doctor, went to specialists, nothing came of it. And then I literally, I just was like, I need to talk to the people who are ailing me. And I was like, Mom, please make umbochi. We're going to talk to them. They need to exactly answer how to help me. That's the only question I will ask. I'll not ask, what does my dosso look like? I'll not ask who my gobela is. I'm not interested. I just want to know how do we fix this problem? And I literally dreamt of a traditional healer that I was supposed to, who helped like really walk me through my Tamaku journey. And until such time that I tossed a dentogoza. So it was like a very fascinating thing, because in having people who are older than me also speak for me when it comes to Amazozi and saying that, how do we like show them then? We believe you. Show them, show us, like, let there be an engagement. Let us open up the gates of communication, because they're already open, but like let it be in a healthy manner that is non-harmful to the child, really.
Right. What about struggling in school? This is something that we hear often, that children who are spiritually gifted often struggle at school.
Yeah, you definitely struggle. I remember I was very academically inclined, so I did well at school, but there would be moments where I'd go blind at school. Just a momentary, or I'd get too sleepy to engage within school. I remember in my matric year, I think in the entire year, I attended about 100 days.
Wow.
Because I could not do it. And it's not even a thing of you struggle. They make it difficult for you to focus even on your books. Even when you do, I thought I wouldn't matriculate at all. Mm. And I was so surprised that even in that did so well, even though I was physically absent.
But you'd gone through many processes to kind of say, help me and guide me and let me.
Definitely. Like, I think even in my matric year then is when even Amadlozi were like, brewing umqombothi is not enough. It's not enough for you anymore. You passed that stage. So now we had to get into rituals of them then having to slaughter for me, and then even like explaining why we are slaughtering and what was the dream and why it happened. And really, I think also that was another reason that led to the absence, is that I was then very, very deeply entrenched within Lozi work.
And so the guidance, to the kind of topic of our conversation is that expect that it will be a lot of, missions and things that you have to fulfill as the parent of a child who's spiritually gifted.
Definitely. I mean, you have to be very involved and very engaged. Yeah. A gifted child is a gifted child, which means that much more extra attention. Fortunately, there are people whom, if they can't articulate themselves using their words, their body movement will articulate for them. And so I think for parents, you do need to be the one who is a little bit going crazy on behalf of your child. Because
Represent.
Much of the protective manner, but you also need to know exactly what's going on and how, which means that the questions even that you ask of spiritual healers needs to be defined. What Lozi is ailing them from the maternal or paternal?
I have to interrupt you. I'm going to go to news. And then I think if you don't mind giving us another 2 or 3 minutes afterwards just to cover those important points. Mkulu Rabba is with us here talking about raising a spiritually gifted child. It's 2 o'clock. What a fascinating conversation. What a fascinating afternoon. Thank you so much for allowing me to take the seat just for today in place of Faith Mangope standing in for Young Faith. I'm Babi Muloi, and this is Power Lunch. You can contact us anytime on 0861-987-000. You can also use the hashtag Power Lunch and send a tweet at Babi Muloi. That is my Twitter handle. And we're speaking to Mkulu Rabba. We've been talking about how to raise a spiritually gifted child, the complexities around it, some of perhaps the fears and nerves that come about as a result of seeing that your little one can see things or talks to, the other side or has spiritual gifting, and how you can walk them through this process. So give us a call anytime on 0861-987-000. Kulu, thank you very much for your patience. I believe you were taking us through some of the process that you also went through and that you'd advise others to begin.
Yes, definitely. I was even speaking to, even before engaging with the process, when you approach the traditional healer, to ask very pertinent questions.
Yes.
Like, for example, where is this gift coming from? Is it the maternal or paternal side? It clears up a lot of things very quickly. Is it a gift that needs indwaso? Does it not need indwaso? Is it is that there are different types of doctrines that a person can twasa under. Mm-hmm. So to ask about them, because there's gamaku, which is not as, like, it's not an incubator. So you don't stay at your gobelas for 6, 7, 2 years at a time. Mm-hmm. Whereas togoza, ndawe, malopo, spilongo, they all incubate. So you'll stay there for a minimum of 4 months to other people 2 years. So there are different, even Boma Kosi are very different. So there are different doctrines, and trying to find out or figure out exactly what your child is seeing, because even the symbols match the different type of doctrine and the different type of dozi that your child can be afflicted with. So just asking about those things is very important.
That's very, very interesting. I've been talking about having a spiritual gift, but we're also, I think, conflating it with having an ancestral calling. Or, Mkhuli, are these both the same thing?
No, they're not.
Okay.
So having a spiritual calling can lend itself to many things and many ways of growing spiritually. So some people can only see prayer or the line of which going through church. And churches of prophecy, and that's where they see themselves, just praying and never engaging with anything else. With other people, it's not even because you have a spiritual gift, it means that you need to be a traditional healer or a sangoma. Sometimes it means that you're a community member that holds that community together. That's how you show up. You know certain things just to be able to assist others, not because you need to go through that process yourself. So I think spiritual giftings are just being able to see beyond yourself. And that's exactly what it is. It's ikhanda nesifuba sakho sivulekile, which means your crown chakra is just open enough to be able to see things beyond our physical realm. Mm. That's what it means. Mm. But having an ancestral calling is meaning that you have to go down a path that it does involve rituals, it does involve a gobela, and.
So children practicing, does that actually happen if you've got an ancestral calling? And what does accepting the gift look like for those children?
So I've never really, I think the youngest I've seen where I've twasad was about 15. Yes, 15. And that was like back in the 90s and early 2000s. But there are children who do twasa and practice, but there are sometimes in the instances that I know of when a child is said to go through peso just a little and then they don't finish. Mm-hmm. So essentially there's a last stage that they don't partake in until they are old enough to partake. So sometimes they won't practice, but it was they needed to go through Pesha to just settle those losses to make sure that they don't go through a hard time at school. But they go through school normally, and until such time, it's something that even the family passes and speaks to Amazozi about, that this person is a bit young. When they are at the appropriate age where they can even understand the things that they're being shown or the traumas that they need to hold other people through, then they are already at a certain stage. But I don't know about young children practicing like full time. I've never encountered it.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I think that this has been such an enlightening conversation. Of course, you know, we need to have more of these conversations and kind of normalize having the conversation and going through these processes. Before I let you go, there are many people who perhaps have chosen not to believe in African spiritualism, right? And if your child then goes through the nightmares or the ailments and the illnesses and perhaps through some other family member finds that they have a gift, I mean, what do you say to that parent who kind of has to turn away from their own belief system?
I think I'm always so... When we explain that a child is ailed by Amazozi, we let them know it's not about the child. It's about everyone else. It's about the family. So the thing that they are dealing with is something that you probably as a parent are dealing with in some shape or form. Sometimes we separate ourselves from certain things because of traumas, because of our own understandings, because of fear mongering. But I think being able to accept your, like, I think the difficult part that parents have is seeing a mirror. For themselves. So seeing your child going through this and being like, they're that much braver. They this, they that. And it's very jarring sometimes, because then children have to come and open the rug if there were things that were being shoved under the rug for decades.
Yeah.
Those children expose wounds. They go around and they take the plasters off. And that's not an easy thing for the child to do, and it's not an easy thing for the family to handle.
Mm.
And so I think just being able to hold each other and have much more understanding, even spiritual teachers that are able to hold the families through the process as well, because it's very important.
And then do you have to call your own child Gogo, and your own child is your Mkhulu? Now, Mkhulu, help us. Do you have to?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, you don't have to answer that. Jethro has called in on 0861-987-000. Jethro, welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, Tepavi. How's it?
Hey, good, good.
All right, man. I've just got one question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you've got a gift of seeing things through visions. How do you then convey those messages, either at the moment of you seeing them, either in the evening, or during the day? Do you then wait and call those people, or you actually have to then physically have a conversation with them after seeing them? Because that's one of those things that where you find yourself having to see things of people that are very far away from you, and then you now need to then pick up the call and say, this is what I saw, and sometimes you don't have an understanding or interpretation of what it really meant. But you actually had a clear vision of what you actually saw.
A vision, and also, are you led to tell them? Because I don't know if you are led to tell them. All right. Mkhulu?
All right.
So I definitely want to speak about spiritual etiquette.
Mm.
So there's a thing that happens when we see things. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to go and tell those people. We have to sort of create a routine with ourselves. And that means when you see something, jot it down. Have a dream journal, have a vision journal, where you jot these things down. The reason why people go even into a peso is to learn spiritual etiquette, to know when it is appropriate to reach out and when not to. And I would like to say 98% of the time, it's never okay to reach out. Especially if you have not yet an understanding of how to interpret your own visions, to interpret your own dreams. I think it's something that we need to get into the practice of going to pray, or either to patla and inform whoever showed you that vision. Thank you for letting me know. I've seen it. I will jot it down, and we will see what happens. It is only when you've been called to do it and trained to do it that you know when it is appropriate to really reach out and tell people things, because some people aren't ready to be told. Mm-hmm. And so consent is also a big thing, even within spiritual spaces.
Sure. And I think that also indicates perhaps a journey, a maturing, a ripening around the gifting. It's not just the gift, as you said, it's the etiquette and everything around it as well. Let's speak to Wetu, who is in Olivedale. Wetu. Hi, Wetu.
Good afternoon. Hello, Pami. Hello, Tabuko. How are you?
Your line is really, really difficult to hear you. So go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes. I just, in light of the comment that you made, or rather the question that you asked, Mkhulu, regarding what happens if the parents do not follow up in spirituality. So I'm an atheist, right? And raising my child atheist, so what then happens in that case? Do I then say, okay, no, we just don't do this? I mean, we don't follow any form of spirituality or any form of religion. We just live as in a methodological, naturalist way in the house. So what then happens in that case? Can you not then say, okay, you're cutting this with your blood type, it's not going to happen. You're just going to leave your children atheistic.
You see, the ancestors didn't even want us to hear that question. But Weta raises a very, very important point, because yes, we are to be open and to give to our children, but you also exist, and your framework of how you parent also does exist. So to answer Wetu's question, if I mean, Wetu's an atheist and the child now comes up having visions, wanting to go Twasa, how does Wetu deal with that?
I think it comes from also we have to stop thinking that children are an extension of ourselves. Because they go out into the world, they experience the world very differently from how we experience the world. They might come from your blood, you might have taught them all these things, but because of positionality, how you are, how you dress, how you look, how you respond, your mannerisms, they play a big role in how you interact with the world. So first, I think it's a difficult thing for parents to have to learn, but they do need to separate themselves outside of their children. Because when they die, they leave their children afflicted with no one to stand for them. And so I think it's very important. It's not about abandoning your beliefs. Nobody says that you have to abandon your belief, but do help your ailing child. Because maybe the practice that they're bringing is a practice that your family had been practicing six generations back, that someone in your bloodline would like, that will bring light to their life and the people around them. So I think it's very important to be able to also know that tolerance is a thing, to not have to fully understand everything, because that's not also our path, but to be able to just support and hold their hands. If there are things that you won't participate in, for example, we've had people have Twasad and their parents are born again Christians. So you know if there's slaughtering happening, they won't come. So it means that us as Gobelas have us to put in the effort to reach out to the other family members that will be able to support the child, that will stand, even if it's an aunt, an uncle, a family friend, someone is there to hold their hand through that moment. Until such time that the parent can show up in the capacity that they can. But there's no expectation.
And I want parents and that caller to realize that, yes, I just want to say that we're very conscious of how challenging that can be. And nobody's coming to try and like stick doctrine into anybody's children's minds or lives. I feel I just have to say that in this conversation, and that it is about all of us learning and growing together. That's what's very important. Linda's called in from your hometown, Mkulu. Linda's in Cape Town. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Bobby.
Welcome.
Thank you guys for inviting Mkulu Raba to the show. He's answered all the questions that I had. I'm also going through the same processes, but I'm still learning. So I thank you guys. He and I went to the same school, so I've experienced all the things that you said are just accurate. I thank you guys for inviting him to the show.
You went to the same school with Mkulu?
Yeah.
Oh. And so what? You saw Mkulu go through processes and have challenges? Or what are you saying?
I have challenges. Well, he's answered all the questions that I needed about dreaming and interacting with whomever that you dreamt of. So I really thank you guys for inviting him.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. Thanks for your call. Are you all right?
I'm cool.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
There are lots of questions. Hey, Mkulu, loads of questions. I feel like sometimes it feels like the great big unknown, that there's so many questions.
Yeah, there definitely is. And I just want to give people, I want people to be kinder to themselves.
Okay.
Even us, we didn't come into it knowing. My mom used to freak out all the time. So did I. For the longest time, I was like, I'm probably making this stuff up. I saw something and I probably thought, but then I really didn't. So I think people also need to be kinder to themselves, be kinder in not knowing and being open to sort of learning. And we all learn from each other. And it's I think what was hilarious is that I went through my calling thinking I was sort of like also avoiding church. And then my calling made me go back to church. So in that's a much amazing. Bigger way and in a way that's much more meaningful even to my own ancestors. So, yeah, I need people to be kinder to themselves.
I think that's very, very important. Gauchelo's in Midrand. Hi, Gauchelo.
Hi, Aspap and Kulu.
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
But, you know, my question comes from the guy who just called who said he's Asian and he's not ritual. Because I think we also shall bring back, if you don't believe in any religion, I think that's when you say you're Asian. But I want to ask Gogore, is Ungoma on the spiritual realm or is it just cultural and a way of people doing mother and has nothing with their religion? Because I believe there's culture and religion and tradition that makes up our spirit. So Ungoma, is it religious?
Ubungoma, is it religious or is it cultural?
I think it is very cultural and very spiritual, and it is not a religion. Because in a religion, as much as there are doctrines that are followed, it is very much individual based and ancestral and bloodline specific. So we could all go through the same process under the same doctrine, but come out using different gifts and engaging with people in different ways, whereas a religion, we all do the same thing. We wear the same clothes. We participate in the same thing. The rules stay the same. There's nothing sort of like spirit specific. And so I think it is very cultural because it is bloodline dependent.
Okay. Okay, I'm trying to keep up. I'm trying to understand, because then religion means it's something that is kind of an organized group situation. Yes. It's a different situation.
Yes, it is a different situation because also there's one, like in each religious group that we know, there is sort of one document that they follow.
Right, okay.
So either it's the Torah, either it's the Bible, either it's the Quran, but there is some sort of written specific document that everyone sort of follows, whereas Ubungoma doesn't fit into those categories.
So Mkhulu, I see many, many, many practicing gobelas and sangomas and you know, seers and sanusis on social media. Are you, and can we follow you?
Okay, I do exist on social media. Yes. But I don't know about practicing live on social media. I don't do it. But I am available on social media at Mkhulu Raba on Twitter, on Instagram, or Lee Mugube, and you'll find me. And really, I do want to be explicit. I do not take dream interpretations through DMs. If someone really wants to sit down and speak, it's booking a consultation. But I don't give unsolicited advice to people.
Listen, I think what you've guided us through this conversation with such compassion and so much insights, and we really, really appreciate you. Thanks for your time. Raising a spiritually gifted child, a child who can see, a child who is called. It must be something that if you in your life have always practiced a certain kind of spirituality, must bring such joy and pride, but at the same time, a real set of brand new kind of unspoken of before challenges. And I'm really grateful to have been a part of this conversation today. All right, we're about to get into our final conversation of the day. Lethabo Sekhu is the co-founder of Credible. Credible was founded by three friends who believed in the development of cultural and creative industries to bring more work and opportunities to professionals. Credible connects clients to creatives and digital services by matching your project briefs to trusted professionals in the Credible network. How they do that? Well, we'll have to stick around for the answer to that after our Power Headlines. Katlego Legodi standing by.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.